Well, we've got the Sweet 16 and two Big 12 teams have made it to the second weekend of March Madness. I'm Pete Mundo. HeartlandCollegeSports.com is where you find us covering the Big 12 Conference. He's our lead basketball writer, Matthew Poston's kicking butt. We are grinding this guy into the ground this month, and he's happy to be with us here on the show. Of course, subscribe to the channel if you haven't yet on YouTube, of course, on the podcast as well, and hit that thumbs up right below the video. All right, Matthew, two teams in the Sweet 16. Let's just start there for the Big 12. I call that a disappointment. What would you call it?
What did I call it when I wrote about it on Monday? I think I called it a mild disappointment. I think when you and I talked before the tournament, I think I said kind of the floor is two teams getting into the Sweet 16.
Yes.
And part of it is because you just never know what's going to happen in this tournament. You know, I agreed with you. I felt like Baylor had a good path. I felt like Texas Tech had a good path potentially, especially when you look at what happened in Texas Tech's pod with Oakland winning that game. That would have been a really good opponent for them to get to the Sweet 16. So I feel like those two teams sort of, you know, squandered an opportunity to get to the Sweet 16 because they had a manageable path. But the two teams that I felt like were going to make it, Iowa State and Houston, were the teams that made it. Although, to be fair, Houston made it by the skin of their teeth, winning it in overtime with four players that fouled out. But, you know, they're a tough team, and they showed their toughness down the stretch and found a way to beat A&M.
They did. I called it a disappointment. I still think it is one. And I know it's one and done. And I hear this talking point of, well, you know, it's a one and done tournament. Anything can happen. But this is how this sport is judged. You're judged by March. Mm-hmm. And it's great to have an awesome regular season. But if you let down in March, that's how you get remembered. And I think the Big 12 let down, especially considering the ACC has double the amount of teams in the Sweet 16. And we thought the ACC was having a down year this year.
Yeah, it's really interesting. I mean, you know, Duke, North Carolina, NC State. NC State's the team that kind of surprised me.
Oh, yeah.
I just felt like at some point they would run out of gas. And I think at some point they probably will. But, you know, they've managed to put together a really good run. And like I talked about Texas Tech and Oakland a minute ago, they became the recipient of Oakland upsetting Kentucky 2 days later when the Wolfpack were able to beat them to move on to the Sweet 16. So we still have Houston. We still have NC State. Shades of 1983. Probably not, but still alive for at least a few more days.
I like where your head's at. I like where your head's at, Matthew Postens. All right, let's dive into the East Regional. This is where we have almost all chalk. Not quite all chalk, but almost all chalk. We've got UConn, San Diego State, the top half of that bracket. And then, of course, the Iowa State Cyclones taking on Illinois. This Iowa State-Illinois game, Matthew, I mean, this is classic Sweet 16. Two teams won their conference tournaments as hot as any two teams in the country. Two outstanding head coaches in Underwood and Otzelberger. This could end up being one of the great games of the Sweet 16. What are you keeping an eye on in this one?
Well, I think somebody posted this the other day. I can't remember where exactly, but apparently Illinois right now has the number one adjusted offensive efficiency in college basketball, and Iowa State has the number one defensive efficiency in college basketball. So it's pretty easy to see it's a, you know, immovable object versus irresistible force kind of situation. Plus you have Terrence Shannon Jr., who's kind of the focal point of Illinois' offense, a player that at least, you know, a couple of the Illinois or the Iowa State players are at least familiar with from his time in the Big 12, but he's really a different player now. You know, Texas Tech did not deploy him in ways in which I felt like he was able to reach his potential offensively. Illinois has done that. Brad Underwood and his staff have done that over the last 2 years. This guy's averaging 31 points a game in his last four games. He is in as much of a groove offensively as any player in this tournament right now. And because Illinois is so forward heavy, which is really strange, I mean, they've got four listed forwards in their starting lineup. They can give you matchup problems defensively. Even as good as Iowa State is defensively, they start a more traditional three guard, two forward alignment. So you're going to have some interesting matchups that happen on the floor when they play one another. And it's going to make switching more difficult for Iowa State as they go through that game.
You know, one of the things I think benefits Iowa State here, and you alluded to the great Illinois offense versus the great Iowa State defense. And then you mentioned Terrence Shannon Jr. on offense, who has been obviously the guy who's carried the load. I don't know if they've got that guy who can step up and be that number two, if this Iowa State defense can effectively maybe not shut down Terrence Shannon, but slow him down. They need that second option. And I know we've watched a lot more Big 12 than Big 10, but I'm not convinced they have that. And I'm not convinced they've seen a defense like what Iowa State is going to throw at them on Thursday night.
Yeah, I mean, not every team runs the no middle the way Iowa State runs it. And Illinois definitely has some different, you know, scoring options, but, you know, they're all kind of front court guys. You know, it's, you know, do they have a second guy in the backcourt that can kind of be that guy if Iowa State is able to slow Terrence Shannon Jr.? It's the matchup problems that I see in a such a forward heavy team. And I realize some of Illinois guys are swing guys, but when you have that many guys who are listed as forwards going up against a team that's a more traditional, you know, 3-2 guard forward, it can create matchup problems both ways. You know,
yes.
You've got speedy guards defending taller forwards. Is that going to be a situation where the forward's going to settle for a jump shot, or is the forward going to drive to the basket the way he might normally do in a more traditional defensive situation? So there's a lot of different things that both of these coaches are going to be able to do and that players are going to have to execute as they go through the game. I see a lot of adjustments as this game goes on, as opposed to Illinois does its thing, Iowa State does its thing, and it's 40 minutes of that. There's going to be a lot more adjustment, I think, in this game as it goes on.
You know, there was some talk on our message boards, actually, which I encourage everybody watching and listening to right now to go sign up for. They are free at heartlandcollegesports.com. There was some chatter on our message boards from Iowa State fans suggesting that they may not have a great showing in Boston, and here's why. They were at the Women's Big 12 tournament in Kansas City. Then the next week was the men's Big 12 tournament, since they broke those things up. So that's two straight weekends. Mm-hmm. Then, of course, in Omaha last week. Now you're talking about Boston, expensive flight, expensive city to go to. I mean, that is a big trip going from Des Moines to Boston. It's an expensive trip for people who just spent 2 to 3 weekends in a row traveling somewhere. So my fear for Iowa State is that home court advantage they felt now for 3 straight weeks may not be there here this weekend. Maybe not in the first game, but certainly not in the second game if they get UConn in the Elite Eight.
Yeah, I mean, that's the benefit of being a number one seed and being the number one overall seed. You kind of get to pick where you go. UConn is considered the number one overall team in the tournament. The NCAA gave them the option and said, where do you want to go? What region do you want to be in? Well, obviously, UConn wants to be in the East because the regional is going to be in Boston, which is an hour and a half away from where they are in stores and in Hartford. So their whole fan base is there. You know, it goes back to the debate we had a couple weeks ago about, you know, should Illinois or should Iowa State have been a number one seed, you know, against, say, North Carolina or against Tennessee, that debate that happened after Selection Sunday. Had Iowa State been a number one seed, first of all, they wouldn't even be in this region.
Yeah.
Second of all, they wouldn't be in the South because Houston would be in the South, but they might be in the Midwest where Purdue is now, perhaps, or even out West. At least those Iowa State fans who were out there for the women in Palo Alto could have at least stayed out there on the West Coast for the regional this week.
Good point. Very good point. And as Matthew Clark writes just now on YouTube, it's also Easter weekend. So another thing to consider that could hurt Iowa State fans showing up in Boston. Let's dive in now to just what you think happens. I believe Iowa State can win this game, and I think they will win this game, something like 64 to 61. I mean, I think they can keep this thing in the 60s. They do that, they win. And I think they'll do that. I think they're going to get the matchup with UConn in a 1-2 come Saturday night in Boston. How about you?
Yeah, I think the lower scoring this game is, the more it benefits Iowa State. If this becomes a situation where Terrence Shannon Jr. is able to take control of the game, score 25, 30 points, that's going to open up opportunities for his teammates. It's going to make it a higher scoring game, and it's going to make it harder for Iowa State to keep up offensively, unless one of their guys gets hot, like Momcilovic, like Curtis Jones, who's done a great job for them off the bench the past couple of games. They need a couple of guys that maybe you might not expect to get hot for them, but the better defense they play, the lower they're able to keep the overall score, the better that chance they have of winning. I have them winning. I don't remember what I had them winning in the preview, but I think it was like a 1 or 2 point game, and I think it was high 60s, maybe low 70s. That's kind of, to me, that's the ceiling. Once you get above the low 70s in total score or in score for both teams, that's when I think Iowa State starts to get in trouble.
If the winning team has 75 or more, Iowa State's not winning.
Probably not.
Yeah, I agree. Let's bounce to the South Regional. Houston, Duke. The Cougars, as you noted, get by on the skin of their teeth, almost blew that game in regulation against A&M. They come back, they take care of it in overtime, and now they've got Duke in the Sweet 16 coming up on Friday. Just looking at this matchup, it's not your, Duke team under Coach K, but it's still Duke.
Yeah,
there's still some pizzazz and swagger there. How do you think Kelvin Sampson is feeling about his team after a scare this past weekend against A&M on Sunday night?
Well, I don't think he's too concerned about his team in terms of bouncing back or anything like that. I think they're keeping tabs on Juwan Robertson, his shin. He re-aggravated it against Texas A&M. Still had a really good game for them in that. I think he played like 35 minutes in that contest, even though he was clearly hampered for the first part of it. I think that, just as in the Iowa State game, there are matchup issues for Houston dealing with Kyle Filipowski, 7-footer, guy who's mobile enough to take forwards out of the paint and create space for the rest of his team. You're keeping tabs on Jeremy Roach, their senior point guard who dislocated his pinky finger in the second round game, did come back. They kind of taped his finger together with his index finger and brought him back to the game. Doesn't sound like it's going to keep him out of the game on Friday, but it's certainly something to watch. All five of Duke's players average double figures. So even though we kind of think of Filipowski as sort of their focal point, they're a very balanced team in terms of how they score the ball, how they move the ball around. They're certainly not as good a defensive team as Houston. And again, I think this is a situation where, Houston's defense is going to have to carry them at least early in this game. They've got to set a tone with physicality. They got to set a tone with how they play defense. I think you're going to see them trap a lot on the wings in the half court, try to make, force Duke into some turnovers early on and try to set that tone. And then, of course, their guards are going to have to score, just like they did the other night against A&M. You saw Emmanuel Sharp have a huge game for them, just like he did the last time they played A&M. And if you're thinking ahead to next year, this is the guy who's going to be the guy. I mean, Shedd, Cryer. I think Cryer might have a COVID year left. I'm not entirely sure, but I think Shedd is out the door after this year. So Shedd, Cryer, Sharp, all three of them are going to have big games against Duke. And I think they're capable of doing that, just because I don't think Duke is quite, Houston's equal defensively.
I don't think they are either. And I'm with you there. That's where it's going to come down to in this game. And I mean, it's if you take the name off the front of the jersey, and it's hard to do with a brand like Duke, it scares me a lot less for Houston. And something tells me, Matthew, that game against A&M, that's the kind of game that for teams that get to the Final Four, you have that game. Sometimes you have that moment. And what I think to, and the guy that I think back to in that game that showed up that most people are never going to remember outside of the diehard Houston fans, is Juwan Roberts.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And Juwan Roberts had himself a great game. I mean, he didn't lead the box score. You know, to the guys that did. But when you look back at a guy like him, and he had like almost a double-double, and he had a huge offensive rebound to start overtime, he kicks it out, they hit a three-pointer, they settle down, and they win the game from there. It's those kinds of plays with those kinds of guys that you have to have at some point in the tournament to get to a Final Four and win a national championship. And I think Houston has those guys. And I don't know if Duke does. I know they've got the flash. We know about Filipowski. But I don't know if they've got those guys. And that's why I've got to give Houston the edge here.
Yeah, I think you're thinking of it. Also looking at where the game is. It's in Dallas. So for Houston fans, it's not too far away. When they got to the Final Four 2 years ago, the regional was in San Antonio. So their road kind of took them through Texas to get to that Final Four in 2021. I think Filipowski does present some significant matchup issues for them just because when Roberts is guarding him, do you let Roberts take him out of the paint or do you hand him off to somebody else because of the way Filipowski can range around the court? It should be interesting to see how they try to handle that defensively. Houston's not a zone team, so I don't see them handing him off, but maybe they put Francis on him to start with, because Francis is a bit more mobile. He's a bit less of a scorer than Roberts is. and they can afford, you know, Francis to get a couple of fouls defending Filipowski more than they can afford Roberts getting those fouls.
Yeah. Now, if you look at just the breakdown of that side of the bracket for Houston, I think the path is, I don't want to say it's not easy, but if they can get through Duke, Houston taking on either Marquette or NC State. I know NC State's one of the hottest teams in the country, but I like that matchup a lot for the Cougars if they can get through this game. Do you actually feel better about a potential Elite Eight matchup on Sunday for Houston than you do with this Sweet 16 game?
I feel good about either one of those matchups because I can't imagine NC State would have that much magic left after a five-game ACC tournament run and then three games in the NCAA tournament. And with Marquette is so much like Houston that Houston can match up well with them, especially with the way they play defense. Now, Marquette has more height than they do, so they're going to have to compensate for that in some way. But otherwise, they match up very well. They both play hardcore man-to-man defense. They both want to get the ball in the hands of their guards. There's a lot of good matchups there for Houston to match up one-on-one with people and, you know, exploit some things and impress. And Marquette does the same things. And sometimes when you play a mirror image of yourself, you play a better game because you're not trying to scheme matchups that don't favor you. You're at least scheming against matchups that are at least even to you. So yeah, if they can get past Duke in that Sweet 16, I think they match up well with both of those teams.
I agree. Now we've got two Big 12 teams left. We've talked about them, Iowa State and Houston. I like Houston getting to the Final Four. I think Iowa State wins, but I don't see how they're beating UConn. Basically, in UConn's backyard, we've talked about some of the struggles that they're going to face, you know, when it comes to playing a true road game in an Elite Eight game, and that's what it's going to be, which is why I think Iowa State got screwed. I know, you know, Jamie Pollard, and I love Jamie Pollard, but he made the case that this was the right draw for Iowa State. They win the Big 12 tournament, and they get this. They got hosed. I don't see them beating UConn in the Elite Eight. How do you see that in terms of how many Big 12 teams we get in a Final Four, 0, 1, or 2?
Well, I think I told you before the tournament that UConn was the one team that I would take against any team in the tournament. UConn hasn't suffered any injury since then. They've looked great in both of their games. They've got tons of experience. They've got tons of depth. They can give Iowa State matchup issues, especially inside. Because their inside guys are so skilled. And now some of them have developed an outside shot so they can pull you out of the paint too. So, yeah, I think Houston has the better chance. I think your odds are better of having one team, that team being Houston in the Final Four, than of having two with both Houston and Iowa State. But if Iowa State does win, if they do beat UConn, if they, that ends up being the matchup, Iowa State will win that game because they just – they find a way to bombard UConn from the three-point line. And I know that's not necessarily their MO, but they have enough good three-point shooters where if a couple of them can get hot, like Momcilovic did in the Big 12 tournament, you know, Taman Lipsey has from time to time, that can be an equalizer for them with the defense on UConn. If they're able to get to the Final Four and beat UConn, I think it's going to be because they go outside their identity a little bit and they shoot well from the three-point line.
Yeah, I would love to see it. Matthew Postens is here on Heartland College Sports. I'm Pete Mundo. As we look at the Sweet 16, the Elite Eight this weekend, and it is going to be an awesome, awesome weekend. I got to ask you, Matthew, I was looking at this the other day, and I thought to myself, are these Sweet 16 games starting later than I remember? I seem to recall them starting in the 6 o'clock Eastern time hour. Mm-hmm. Now they're starting in the 7 o'clock Eastern time hour, 6 o'clock Central hour. But I feel like the NCAA has pushed these games back and I don't want to feel like an old man, but man, Matthew, you're going to have these games, the game in Boston. I mean, that game's going to end at like 1 a.m. local time. It's crazy.
Yeah. I may get home from Rangers opening day before that game ends between Iowa State on Thursday night.
Yeah. Yeah,
yeah, I do agree with you. I don't think it's an old man thing. I think they are pushing the game times back a little bit. Because I remember when I was a kid, those first Elite Eight or those first Sweet 16 games on Thursday night would start before 6 o'clock.
Yeah.
And now they're starting well into the 6 o'clock hour. And I think they're also giving a little more buffer room between games. And obviously the first game, you know, it's going to run long. So it's going to bleed into the second game. So yeah, it's going to be a late night, both nights, Thursday night and Friday night, because Iowa State and Houston both have, I believe, the late games, both those nights.
What's the biggest disappointment of a game in the Big 12 to you in the tournament? I'll give you mine. That way you can look up yours. If you don't have it off the top of your head.
I think my biggest disappointment is BYU. BYU. Them losing in the first round. I just feel like I felt like they had a good matchup. I felt like their team was playing well. I felt like that was a game they should have won. Personally, if you're a five seed, that's a game that you and it wasn't just that they didn't win the game. I didn't feel like they didn't play nearly as well as they could have in that game. But just like, not that they didn't show up, but we've talked about all season about how their 3-point shooting is kind of their live and die.
Yeah.
They died by it in that first game.
We talked about it. Like, the 3-point shooting doesn't always travel to neutral site courts where you're not comfortable and have never played before. Right.
Yeah. And they were only in Omaha. So, I mean, it wasn't like it was them going across the country. They were one time zone away and in a place where I would imagine they've probably played either a neutral site game or, a local, I guess that'd be Creighton. I guess they'd be the local team there. Mm-hmm. I would assume they've played in that venue at some point in the last few years.
Yeah. For me, and I know this isn't the worst loss necessarily, but I was so disappointed in Baylor and the way they just crapped the bed against Clemson. Now, they tried to make a late comeback. It was a valiant effort. But with the way that Clemson coach, and we talked about this on Selection Sunday, the way that Clemson coach seemed to change the narrative around the Big 12 when they came to, you know, some surprisingly lower seeds than maybe what we expected, I was hoping Baylor was going to smack this team across the face, and they failed to do it. So I give Clemson credit, but I was so crushed by Baylor losing that game, and the box score and the final score made it appear like a closer game than it really was.
Yeah, they really had to bounce back from a deep hole. And I just, you know, Baylor has been one of those teams, especially the last few weeks, that has started slow. That's actually why I was sort of impressed by the way they won their first round game. They started well in that game offensively. They got off to a good start. So I thought, okay, well, they've finally gotten that slow start out of their system, because both of their Big 12 games, they started very slowly. And then the same thing happens against Clemson. They have another slow start. And, you know, you can only be good enough to overcome that for so long. And they just were not good enough to overcome that on Sunday.
They weren't. Now, I don't know about you. I've got three Final Four teams left. Now, this is a pretty chalky tournament so far. So I've got Houston. I've got Creighton. I've got UConn left. I had Baylor as my fourth Final Four team. So they're out. Who is your Final Four? What do you have left in the Final Four?
I don't think I even looked. Hang on a sec.
What do you did this guy? I mean, what? Come on, you got to be kidding me.
Which is it? Is it the Heartland College Sports public bracket?
Yes. Let's look up the bracket for the website that we're talking about right now. Make sure you pull.
I've got three of them in there. That's why I asked.
Oh, you got three? Oh, really? You got three?
I think
they
have like the previous pools in there too.
I got you. Yes. I want to see what your bracket. Let me see what that bracket looks like.
I'm seventh.
You're seventh, and we had like 40 people enter, 50 people, something like that, in the bracket pool. So seventh's pretty good, but I feel good with my three Final Four teams left. I picked Baylor, like I said, that's the one I'm missing out on right now. But it has been a pretty chalky tournament, so I would say most people have at least two Final Four teams, probably three. You know, maybe if you had Kentucky going somewhere, you're losing out on Kentucky, but. By the way, Calipari's staying, so have fun with that, Wildcat fans.
Exactly. I think I've still got UConn. I can't tell from this. This is weird. It doesn't really tell me who I picked, which is very odd.
Well, that's a problem.
Yeah. So I know I picked UConn. I know I picked Houston. So I know I've got two left. I think I might have picked...
No, I got your bracket right here.
Okay, thank you.
I got your bracket. All right, I got your bracket right here. You had UConn, Houston, Purdue, and Baylor.
Okay, all right.
So you got the three one seeds left. You got the 3-1 seeds left in your bracket, so you're good there. You're all set. All right. So we both have three. You picked Baylor like me, and we're in a similar spot right now. So you're in a good place. And by the way, I will say this when it comes to the rankings – let me see where you're at in the rankings. You're I think doing better than I am. Well, actually, no, I've got you in second to last place.
Oh,
you might be looking at the wrong bracket.
I was about to say, I must be looking at
the wrong
bracket.
Now, don't worry. I'm in fourth to last place. You're looking at the wrong bracket. I'm in third to last place. You're in second to last place. Oh, what's that say about us? This is problematic. Very problematic. Well, unbelievable.
This is what happens every year.
But it's a lot of fun.
Exactly.
By the way, we've got YouTube comments coming in saying you're bracket harvesting. So how do you feel about that? You're cheating the system a little bit here.
Apparently one of them didn't have anything in it. So it was no more than two. It was just everything had X's next to it, and I couldn't figure it out. Like, what is that? So I think X's, they're left over X's from old bracket challenges, and they just roll over from year to year. But I filled out the one you sent the link to, and the other two I think are just dead.
Gotcha. All right. Well, X's and brackets are usually not a good thing. So just my 2 cents. Well, I think it's going to be an awesome Sweet 16. We'll be back for some Elite Eight talk as well. And listen, I cannot wait for what's to come this week. And I think the first weekend was kind of a dud by NCAA tournament standards. We don't have those real Cinderella stories. The good thing about that is that the second weekend is when the heavyweights really start to shine. So we've got all the heavyweights, we've got every 1 and 2 seed left, and that could mean epic Sweet 16 and Elite Eight games, even if we don't have the Cinderella. Final word.
Maybe Tom Izzo was right. Maybe we don't like Cinderellas after the first weekend.
Well, no. The first weekend, I'm not here to defend Tom Izzo. The first weekend's about the Cinderella, the second weekend's about the heavyweights.
Well, I think Tom's a little behind the times on that, but you're right. We don't have that St. Peter's this year. We don't have that Loyola Chicago. We don't have that George Mason this time around. We don't have that team that got to the second weekend. I mean, yeah, you could say NC State's that weekend, but they're from a power conference. I mean, they've got plenty of good athletes to make a run like that. You don't have that true Cinderella going into the second weekend that has kind of captured everybody's imagination and is getting all the attention going in. It's different, you know, the last couple of years. It's interesting. And you're right. We could have some incredibly good games for the next 4 days.
Well, it is going to be a lot of fun. He's Matthew Postens. I'm Pete Mundo. Heartland College Sports is where you find us. Sign up for those free message boards. Interact with other Big 12 fans there. It's a lot of fun. It's free as well. And if you're just joining the show or you're wrapping up the show with us here, hit that thumbs up on the YouTube video. It helps with that dopey algorithm they have more than you realize. And subscribe to the channel and to the podcast. Thank you guys for being here as always. Love you. Go Big 12. Enjoy the games. We'll have a lot of content on the site over the next few days. See you later.